Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Just as happy as can be to be back here on a Monday afternoon. Thanks so much for taking the time with us. We've got a great week, actually. We're going to have a great week of shows, and we're starting it off big. This hour and next, we're going to try to answer every objection that we can think of to the Catholic annulment process. Annulments, this is one way of learning about annulments, for one thing. I know that many, many people have questions. There are people that we talk to them all the time. They're interested in coming into the church, but they don't know if their marriage situation will prevent them, all that kind of stuff. So people are very interested in this topic of annulments, but we wanted to answer every single possible question we could get to about annulments, like, are they just a form of Catholic divorce? And is it just kind of legalism? Is this just Catholic legalism? Or is there any root for this in the Bible and the teaching of the prophets and the scriptures and Jesus himself? Is this even related to that? All that, that's what we're going to do. So who would you call if you wanted to get every question you could think of answered about annulments? And the answer is not Ghostbusters. I know people my age, who are you going to call? And they always say Ghostbusters. No, it's Rose Sweet. Rose Sweet is our guest. She comes on quite regularly. We talk about all kinds of things, often various things having to do with marriage, divorce, and annulment, but other things as well. She's a life coach. She's an author. She's a magnificent speaker. Mm-hmm. Rose Sweet, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you, Cy. I always feel good when I come here because you're so kind in your introductions.
Really?
Yeah, you and then that? It goes downhill after that.
All right. That actually is kind of true. I have to admit, I let you down usually after the introduction goes well. And then, but the introduction is my true feelings, Rose. The rest of it is all just tomfoolery.
And you know what? You and I need to have fun because usually when I'm on here, we're talking about difficult, painful subjects. So we're bringing a little humor in there too. A little spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
It does. It does indeed. And this is tough medicine. So you fill up to every question we can think of about annulments?
Let's do it. But, you know, time is limited, but let's make sure that we address the most difficult. How's that?
Okay. All right. Well, I was trying to think of an analogy before this when you and me and Bender were talking, and I said you can't really describe a cheeseburger to someone who's never heard of a hamburger, and so that's probably the stupidest analogy anyone has ever come up with for this. But you can't really talk about annulments if people don't know what you're talking about when you say marriage. So maybe, perhaps we could start there.
I'd love to, because annulment is looking, you know, at the two people and tell us your situation and did you have a valid marriage bond? So we have to understand marriage first. And I find that a lot of Catholics don't really understand what the church teaches about marriage. I didn't way back day.
Yeah, I think that's true.
So let's spend this time, you know, talking about, you know, what does make a valid marriage bond? What sets marriage apart from every other human relationship?
It's certainly the case, I think, that the cultural view of marriage has shifted so much in the last, well, in certainly since movies started coming out in the 1920s, that it's not really hard to understand why Catholics don't understand the Catholic teaching on marriage. They don't even understand the traditional teaching on marriage, you know, just natural marriage.
Right, right. You know, the level of catechesis is usually low and that's, you know, we can't complain about that too much. That's just the way it is. So people don't, I think today people think marriage is a relationship where you like each other and you want to spend time together and you want to split bills together so it'd be easier and you want to go on vacation together. You may want to have kids or not. But you want to leave the back door open in case you fall out of love with each other. You mm-hmm. shouldn't have to restrict each other. And you're really there to make each other happy. There's nothing about holiness or permanence or
service.
Or service, exactly. What happens when the feelings of love go out the window? You go out the door.
Yeah.
So, and that's not marriage. That's a relationship, and there's some elements of business arrangement to it.
I hate to say this, but I kind of suspect it, and it's maybe pointless for me to say this, but I just am not in the habit of cutting myself off when I have something pointless to say. So I'm at the risk of this being my usual pointless blather. I wonder how much the catechist in school is afraid to talk about the permanence of marriage because the catechist knows the families of the kids and doesn't want to upset the family, really. So doesn't want to say, look, this is a permanent union that cannot be divided. This is an indivisible union. There is no power on earth. That's the teaching of the church. There is no power on earth that can divide a true marriage.
Well, you're absolutely right. I don't think it's just the catechists. God bless them. Sometimes it's the pastor. It's the priest. We're in a culture where if you say something that offends somebody else or triggers them, look what happens.
Yeah.
They will take you out, in extreme cases. So we tend to, by our human nature, not make waves, tiptoe, avoid the tough topics, but not Catholic answers.
Okay. All right. Well, I do think the church recognizes these are very difficult times for marriage. And so there is a sense of compassion about it, but you can't, it's so easy to say what marriage is in the understanding that the Catholic Church has received from Jesus. It's a permanent union. That's not hard to say. It's hard to live. It's hard to.
Well, but that's not fair to restrict somebody. What if we fall out of love? And that's cruel to force us to be together with somebody that we don't even like and we don't feel safe with. That's mean. You're mean.
I am mean. But I would point out that a lot of times the person who falls out of love and leaves is actually abandoning somebody who centered their entire life around them. And let's not lie about that. I mean, the truth is it's. Sometimes it's the case that two people simultaneously realize they are not in love with her, but a lot of divorce is abandonment.
Right, and the abandonment doesn't just necessarily mean you walked out the door, got a separate place to live, and filed paperwork with the courts. It means that you emotionally began to distance and cut yourself off from the other person. The life force there is cut.
Well, and then there's the other part, too, that we assume that if you make a promise, you're going to keep. It's not mean to say, well, we thought when you gave your word, you were going to keep your word.
I know, but I was a different person back then. You just got to understand. I know, we got it, right?
So you should give up your Social Security then, because if you were a different person, then I don't see why you should be collecting that person's Social Security.
Okay, so look, it's taking you and me. It's taking time and effort to think about these things, to talk them through and to find the common sense. And most people don't want to spend that level of time and effort in these kind of things. But they're crucial to our flourishing as human persons. And the Catholic Church has always understood that and always will uphold it. She will never lower the standard, even though everybody in the universe isn't living up to it. She'll never lower it. She can't.
No, she can't, because Jesus himself is the foundation of this. Is not even one of those ones where you go, well, Scripture's not entirely clear about this, but the tradition of the church is. And as much as I love and respect the tradition of the church, it's harder to point to than literal words on a page of the Savior. And Jesus was anything but unclear on this.
Right. And here's the other thing. You and I were talking. If we had written down in black and white everything Jesus said and everything Jesus did, John tells us it would be a million books. We could never get through it all. So we have to look for it in Scripture. Yes, we have to look for it in tradition. But that we also have common sense and intellect and intuition and instinct that God gave us to discern these things. So,
well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very quick break. We'll get the break out of the way real quick, and then we'll come back. And starting with the person of Jesus and his answer on marriage, And we'll talk about what is marriage, the way the church understands it. And with the understanding that when we say, I do want to make this clear, when we say the way the church understands it, we're not saying the way one of the various institutions on earth understands it. We're talking about the infallible representative of the Lord's own teaching on the earth. So how the church understands it is how it is that, what, in other words.
Amen, brother.
So is that correct to say is how it is, Darren? Do you think I'm grammatical? He says yes. he just wants me to go to the break. He said, yes, it's fine. Go to the break. Right back with more. Every possible question that we could think of about annulments for Rose Sweet on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at Magnificat.com.
Hi, this is Mike Aquilina with a few words about St. Cyprian. Cyprian was born to a rich family in Carthage, North Africa. As an adult, he converted to Christianity, and soon he was named bishop of his city. He led the church through a time of multiple crises, including persecution. He himself died a martyr.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Rose Sweet is our guest. We're trying to answer every question we can think of for Rose about annulments, and we'll start with marriage then. So would you say, if you had to classify it, the Catholic Church's teaching and Jesus' own teaching on marriage is beautiful or terrifying? Which would you say?
Oh, the perfect Catholic answer. It's both.
Yeah, because the apostles were literally terrified by it. They were like, "What?"
Right.
But it also is clearly there's something beautiful being taught by the Lord.
So, well, it's like Jesus himself was both.
Yeah, that's true. Terrifying.
Good and terrifying.
Yeah.
Good and terrifying. Exactly.
Yeah.
No, marriage is the icon. It's modeled after and actually takes us into, in a mystical way, the covenant union of Jesus and his bride, the church. So how does Jesus love his bride? How does he relate to us, to the soul? And this is where, you know, saints throughout history and all the teachers of the, you know, doctors of the church and all those smart people.
Doctors of the church and smart people.
Yeah, exactly.
Both. Yeah.
They've all said, look to Christ, look to Christ. And that's what we're going to do. Look to Christ. How does he love? And Jesus' love for his bride is completely faithful to her good and to her flourishing and to her sanctity. So there's an element of fidelity that must go into that marriage relationship. It's a permanent thing. Jesus will never leave us, forsake us, abandon us. Even we can run away from him, but he'll keep the door open, like the father and the prodigal son, as long as we leave our sin at the door.
Yeah.
There's a condition. So it's a permanent love. It's a faithful love. We are one. And it is open by its very nature, divine life. Divine love is also divine life. Love and life are inseparable. And so when the human soul, and here's a beautiful spousal analogy that we have all throughout Scripture, Old and New Testament, when the human soul opens to receive God, God plants his divine seed of life and love, and that soul takes that and bears that and nurtures it and gives that divine life out to the world. This is a beautiful and powerful image of that life-giving union of the soul with God and with the bride of Christ, the church, with him.
That, boy, it's beautiful when you speak about that, but it really gives even greater impact to Christ's own words when asked about divorce, when he says, from the beginning it was not so. So from the beginning, he's saying this. This is this permanence, this total giving because it looks like the way that God gives himself to us and calls us to give ourselves to him, that this marital, right from the very foundation of the earth, male and female, he made them. That's what Jesus is quoting. From the beginning, it was not so when it comes to divorce, because from the beginning, how was it? It was about total self-giving.
Right. And let's even go back before that. God himself is a communion of persons who totally and perfectly and perpetually give themselves to one another.
Right, right.
So
all of this is in the image of the divine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is one of the ways we as humans image the divine.
One of the most beautiful, powerful ways that we image him. And so we will flourish, we will find all the happiness we're looking for if we do it the right way. And when we don't, we'll find temporary happiness, but not the happiness we're meant to have.
A lot of people will say, look, yeah, this is the real world. Like, I know a lot of people just shrug at this point and go, come on, this is the real world.
It is the real world. Okay? But this world is going to pass.
Ah, yeah.
And for some of us, maybe pretty soon, sooner than we think. We just heard it in the gospel yesterday, you know. You fool, this very night,
oh, right,
your life will be taken from you.
Yeah.
Yes, listen to the words of Christ. And that's what we're doing when it comes to the teachings of the church on marriage and divorce and annulment. Always look to Christ.
All right, let me get to question number one then,
okay,
about annulment.
Wait.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
One more thing. I want to throw this in about marriage.
Throw it.
These teachings are not new. They've been going on for even before Jesus was, you know, around.
Yeah.
You know, the Jews are always looking at, can I marry? Can I divorce? Can I marry? So this is nothing new. We have broken relationships, right? So St. Augustine came up with the three goods of marriage. And this is what a lot of people in the church today will teach on marriage. There's bonum sacramenti, which means the good of the sacrament. That means it's you're one and it's permanent until death.
Mm-hmm.
Then bonum prolis, the good of having children and educating them in the faith. Okay. So
okay.
Permanence, unity, children, and bonum fidei, fidelity. You know, you're one with each other and you're not even looking at anybody else. You're faithful to each other. But when 1983, the new canon law came out, the church formally introduced what's been floating around forever, a fourth good, which is bonum conjugum, the good of the spouses.
Yeah.
Now, I want to give you a quick example, if I can.
Okay.
There was a man and his wife, and they were Catholics, and they got divorced, civilly divorced. She filed for annulment and was granted annulment. The second diocese affirmed it. And he was furious and hurt and angry. And he said, look, I agreed to fidelity. I agreed to permanence. And I agreed to openness to children. But people were saying, but you treated her like dog doo-doo, and you didn't love her, and you neglected her, and you abused her, and you verbally castigated her, and there was no love. And he said, this marriage is not about love.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about feelings. Well, there's a certain truth to that. When things get tough, you don't just go, well, I don't have the feelings for you. But there has to be the good of the spouses as part of this relationship.
Yeah.
Because what if...
So if you never intended the good of the other spouse, then you didn't marry that person,
right?
Is what you're saying.
Okay, so let's, and I was thinking, what's an extreme example of this? Somebody who takes a 14-year-old girl away from her family and takes her away, abducts her, and then has sex with her and is open to kids and wants to keep her around forever. He doesn't want to get rid of her. So there's permanence and fidelity. He's not doing anything with anybody else, but he doesn't even love her.
Yeah.
So that's not marriage, and common sense tells us that.
Okay.
So those are the four goods of marriage.
Here's the problem, though. The more you keep piling on these goods of marriage, mm-hmm, and this very exalted, and there is nothing, there is no institution, no people, no philosophy has a more exalted view of marriage than the Catholic Church. And this is one of the signs you could point to the Catholic Church to say it's true. It has the highest, most exalted view of what marriage is. Therefore, this question, why do we have annulments? It's just Catholic divorce.
Okay, so that was a nice segue into annulments.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. When you get a civil divorce, the result is you're free to marry. That's the end of getting divorced. I want out of this, and I want to be free to. I want to be free of this obligation and this debt.
Right.
Okay. The annulment process is also about seeing if you can be freed from this bond, if there even was a bond, and be free to marry. So, in a certain sense, civil divorce and annulment have the same end, but they're done differently for different reasons and in different ways.
Okay.
So the civil annulment is, okay, you had a civil marriage, it's valid, but now we're breaking it. The annulment process says, tell us what went on in your marriage, and let's see if there's enough evidence to show that from the very beginning something was wrong or in the way of a valid marriage bond from even coming into being. So if that's the case and you have enough credible evidence, we are going to declare that even though you said I do, something was in the way and there was no valid marriage bond. So we don't take a valid marriage and break it.
Yeah, okay.
We say there was no valid marriage bond to begin with.
Right. So the divorce breaks something that existed.
Yes.
The annulment tells us whether or not
it
something
exists. That's so correct. Now, may I say this too? Far too many, and I've heard it on Catholic radio, far too many people say, when you have an annulment, the church is saying that you had no marriage. You didn't really have a marriage. And that triggers so many people who have six kids.
Yeah, I was married. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the proper way to say that is what the church teaches. The church found that you had no valid marriage bond. You had parental bonds and legal bonds and affectionate bonds and good times. You did have a marriage, but it was a civil marriage only. You did have a marriage, but it was civil only. You didn't have what it took for validity in the eyes of the church.
So Moses, who taught that you could divorce, and it's Jesus who corrects Moses and says no. But those were not, Moses could do that because those would be like just a civil marriage in a sense. There wasn't a bond in the way that a sacramental marriage is a bond.
Well, Jesus didn't say you can't divorce, and I'm tiptoeing around here. He's saying you can't divorce just for the hardness of your heart. Remember, Moses allowed divorce for the hardness of your heart, your self-centered ways. But I tell you from the beginning, it was not so. But Jesus did say there are cases where there has been a civil marriage and it's invalid because the father married his daughter, you married your grandmother, whatever the case is.
Right.
Jesus recognizes that some people aren't capable of a valid marriage bond.
Yeah, right. Or it may be that the people each individually is capable of a marriage bond, but they are not, they can't marry each other.
Right.
They're siblings or they're
right.
So no bond is, you can go marry somebody else if you want, but the church, okay, so it's not Catholic divorce because it's not a breaking of a marriage. It's a finding that the sacramental marriage or
the valid marriage bond
never occurred.
I'm glad you caught yourself because the whole sacrament, I know the sacrament is a whole different level. I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So that seems, it seems to me that most people, and this goes back to Jesus in St. Matthew's gospel.
Right.
So he says you can't break a marriage unless it's an illegal marriage.
Right.
So that he gives the exception. Go ahead.
But he's not even saying we have to be very careful about our words. He's not saying you can break an illegal marriage. It's saying there is no marriage.
Yeah, in the case he doesn't mention marriage again.
You're not breaking something that was there.
Right.
It wasn't there.
So Matthew's gospel then gives us that template because that is there's a common sense to it that if the church was to say no, every marriage is always valid. If you stood in front of the priest or whatever, you know, was done at that historical moment of the church. But if you stood in front of the priest and gave those vows, there's nothing that can break that. And then somebody goes, yeah, but they were holding my mom hostage and they were going to kill her if I didn't. Sorry. There has to be some mechanism to go, look, that's ridiculous. You're not married.
Okay.
You're free to marry someone
else. And again, so we look to Christ again. Okay, what is marriage? We go back to how does he love his bride? And, you know, he doesn't hold anybody hostage. He does not hold us hostage to be in union with us.
Yeah.
We have a freedom to come or go from him, which is pretty scary. So again, the church is, these aren't man-made rules. This is, we're always looking to Christ. Always, always, always.
Okay, so that, all I'm saying is, in principle, I can see this then. If you're saying annulment is not breaking a marriage, it's a finding that this marriage couldn't have happened or didn't happen.
No.
And you've got to have...
A marriage happened.
Yeah, okay.
There was no valid marriage
bond
that was created at the time they exchanged consent and said, I do.
Right. And even if I had to go to extreme cases, there's been 100 people, 100 billion people that have lived. So even if I said, look, this is only for the most extreme cases where something crazy happened, where somebody was drugged or kidnapped, or you'd still have to say sometimes a marriage is not valid. Like everyone would have to admit that sometimes it didn't happen.
Okay, well, even the civil courts recognize that.
Yeah.
The civil courts won't marry an 8-year-old boy with anybody.
Yeah.
That's invalid. So I don't care if they went to Las Vegas or their uncle was a minister and he wrote a marriage certificate. The state won't even recognize that it's valid.
Yeah, right. So there has to be some mechanism
right,
for this.
Right.
But here's, I mean, so this is, I'm setting up question number two, which is, come on, this is so abused. There's so many of these. So you hear the music?
Okay, I do hear the music.
All right, we'll do it when we get back. Even if we admit the principle, in other words, it's an overused mechanism.
Okay.
So that's the thing I want you to answer when we come back.
I will.
Rose Sweet, our guest on Catholic Answers Live. Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Steve Dawson, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme? Go make disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
I'm Deacon Harold Burke Sivers. Join me for Beacon of Truth.
Today at 4 p.m. Eastern
on the next Beacon of Truth, talking to Dr. Scott Hahn and Soulful Psalm 10.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. Our guest, Rose Sweet. Our topic, we wanted to ask her every single question we could think of about annulments. And so we are taking the time to do that. We're very grateful for Rose for making the time available to us. So the first kind of complaint about it, my way of asking the question, is an annulment just Catholic divorce? And you gave a simple, clear explanation of why it's not Catholic divorce. There has to be a marriage bond created, and there's lots of situations where the form of marriage might be observed, but that doesn't mean a bond was created there.
Right, right, right.
But so my question number two has to do with, yeah, but Rose, come on. Like, so many people get annulments. Isn't it overused and abused?
Do so many people get annulments? Where did you get that information?
Darren,
No, okay.
I don't know. Okay. Don't put me on the spot like that. But I don't use information. I just use my opinion.
Okay, well, that's my point. Okay. That's my point. If you heard it, a lot of people hear this and perpetuate the myth. But let's get down.
Wait, is that really a myth?
No, but it is and it isn't. Okay, there are a lot of annulments granted in the United States of America compared to other countries.
Okay. Yeah, that's
and
a good distinction.
It's been talked about, and so Bishop Thomas Olmsted from
Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix. Yeah, is he? I don't know.
He's not the bishop
there.
Now. Right. He's our friend from here in San Diego is the bishop over there now.
But he gave a lot of reasons. He says we're in a culture where everything goes. People are raised. You can go out the door. You can leave. And a lot of times people get married with the option for divorce, and that invalidates the marriage bond. He said he also, and a lot of other people have said this, experts as well, that a lot of the weak cases that are sent to the tribunal are weeded out before they get to the annulment to the judges. And so high percentage of annulments are granted because the weak cases are just thrown out or they drop by the wayside.
Or their pastor says, look, no.
Right.
Or the deacon, like you go and you say, here's my, and they go.
You don't have.
There's no grounds.
Right. So, okay. The other thing, too, is in this country, and this was interesting, in this country, we are highly educated compared to other parts of the world. We have the money to send people to canon law school. We have expert canonists in tribunals all over our country who are able to take these situations and look at them properly and grant annulment. In other countries, they don't have that. You know, there's countries where you can't get an annulment because there's no canonists around for hundreds of miles. And I'm kind of exaggerating here, but in our short
time. Maybe not
time,
so much, though. Like, I've been some places in the world where you'd be surprised to find a canonist within 100 miles.
Right. So there are legitimate reasons why there are so many annulments in these current times compared to to previous times. Another thing that Bishop Olmsted said was that in our country, we're very law-abiding. We're more, and I thought that's an interesting thing.
Oh, that's really interesting because there might be places where people are just a little more casual about this altogether.
Right.
And they don't even ask the church.
Right,
permission.
But as Catholics, we don't want to do it the right way, and we want to follow the rules. We want to follow the law. We have faith in the church. In other places in the world, people believe in God, but they might not trust the people in the church. You know, we know of countries where there's a lot of corruption in the hierarchy, and maybe the faithful are just doing their own thing.
Yeah, right.
So there's a lot of reasons. Again, we could do a whole show on that, but there are a lot of annulments, but there are good reasons for it. Can it ever be abused? Can somebody ever get a bad judge in a tribunal and an annulment go through that gets denied or given and that's not right? Sure, like in anything in law, we're not perfect, but those are very small.
Yeah, I think if someone has in their mind or heart the objection, well, the tribunals are not perfect, that's a silly objection. That would be a silly objection because, of course, they're not going to be perfect. But you're saying even beyond that, you don't think they're being excessive given the circumstances.
I know they're not. I have worked for the last however how many decades with tribunals all around the country, and by and large the people are highly dedicated, faithful Catholics, only want to uphold the dignity of marriage, which I brought my little show and tell thing.
All right, let's see it.
It's called Dignitas Connubii. If anybody can see this, I don't know where I'm supposed to point that.
No, you got it up there, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the Bible. This is norms and commentary for people in the tribunals to go through the annulment process properly.
Excuse me, Rose. Yeah.
Okay. It's loaded with things to ensure the dignity of the human person, to uphold marriage. Dignitas Connubii, the dignity of marriage. This is not a book on annulments. This is a book on marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Uphold the marriage at all costs. So I have great faith in 99.9% of tribunals.
Well, okay, you do. We need, I wonder if maybe there's just an impression out there that is hard to overcome.
Well, here's where I think it comes from. Very sad, hurt, wounded, angry people who feel that their personal annulment case was mishandled by the tribunal. And
they're
out there in the Catholic world with their microphones saying, putting down bishops, putting down tribunals, putting down the process, and attacking with this very thing, overused and abused. And yes, there are always cases. It's just like the priest scandal. Okay, we know that's real, right? But we've all come to realize over these last few decades that the numbers are not like that everybody was saying at the beginning. It's still bad.
It's not like 10% of priests are abusers or something.
No, it's still bad,
and
it's still horrible, and we should be horrified. So if anything, any abuse is happening in the church anywhere, especially in the tribunals, we should be horrified.
Sure, yeah,
but let's not take that and build a big case against the whole thing, and that's what I think too many people do.
Okay, so... do you think, from your own experience, do you think that because of the kind of growing casualness in society over the last 75 years or so regarding marriage, that there's more people entering into unions not really knowing or not really not knowing what they're doing or not really willing what the church expects them to will, you know? They're like, they kind of got a back door in their mind of, I'll get out of this if I need to.
Well, I remember for a long time I did marriage preparation weekends, and we used the Focus exam inventory, you know, 160 questions, I think, to help couples.
I got them all right on mine.
Oh, please.
I did. I got them.
Talk about abuse.
160 out of 160. They were the first perfect score they ever saw. They were like, you are going to be the best husband.
You're hilarious. Missy, call in. Call in today. I'm here for 2 hours.
I got a perfect score. Okay. At least that's the way I remember it. Go ahead.
Okay. So I remember the question is, if your spouse ever cheated on you, that would be grounds for divorce and leaving. And 90% of them, yes.
Wow.
Yes. And I had to address, and these are good Catholic young people, right?
Right.
And some older people.
And they really believe that.
If the spouse cheated, that gave them grounds for, I'm gone, over, done.
Do you think that's because they were formed by the Protestant idea? Because sometimes Protestants have actually been taught that what Jesus says in Matthew's gospel means adultery. And that's clearly not what Jesus meant.
Right.
But it is taught by many, or do you think it's just a secular, like, no, you cheat on me, I'm leaving. I'm out the door.
I think it's both. I think it could be, you know, a combination of all that, but mostly the culture is, you know, we've raised our children to be happy. You give them whatever they want. You give them the awards and the trophies. As a parent, my job is to make you happy. So why shouldn't my employer make me happy? Why shouldn't my spouse make me happy?
Yeah.
And if I'm not happy, I have the right to leave and find my own happiness. I mean, that's just so prevalent in our culture.
Yeah, right.
So
there's a kind of live your best life attitude, which is not a like live your holiest life. It's like get the best you can out of almost a bucket list attitude of life.
Right.
Hey, I'm sorry, you're bumming me out. I can't be married to you anymore.
Right.
This isn't the life I wanted.
Right. No, I know. You're right. We're the last ones standing to uphold this vision of marriage. And I know the church will never change her teachings on marriage.
I didn't give this to you as anything to prepare for, so I'm just saying this off the cuff. But never mind.
No, say it. It's too late now.
Is
Come
it
on.
Really? It's too late now?
Trust the Holy Spirit.
There's a lot of people who think it's impossible now in the modern world. Like they literally say, that's not possible. That's an impossible standard.
Okay, it's a high standard.
Yeah.
But it is possible. Now, in my own marriage, God rest Bob's soul, who took my sandwich every time I left it in the refrigerator.
We're not picking on Bob about your sandwich now.
I know.
Don't say God rest his soul, he took my sandwich. Get over it, Rose.
I'm not bitter. No. I'm just joking. Okay, so.
You weren't joking at the time, though. You were mad that he ate your sandwich.
I was mad.
Yeah.
Okay, we had wonderful moments of wedded bliss. And I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking about mutual support and love and understanding and encouragement and a shared mind and a shared heart. And that's real. And nobody can take that away from you. Now, because of our broken nature, sometimes that went out the window and other stuff would come in and we get mad and bitter and unforgiving right. toward each other. So, yes, nobody has the perfect marriage. But you try. You hold that up so that you have something to go for. If we lowered it, we'd be animals.
Well, that's actually a little bit of what's happening is people have, I mean, with the loss of marital standards, I mean, a lot of other things have gone wrong in society, but we do see, like, for example, the vast majority of men in prison, the father was not in the home, at least for right. most of their being raised. So there is something animal that happens to us if we lower the standards of marriage.
Right. And what in my mind, when you say animal, is that there is that part of us, but what happens, the divine part of us is darkened.
Yeah.
Our intellect is darkened, our will is weakened, and our desires are disordered. Those are the ends of sin. And that's what happens. And we do go down to a very low place. And we're not happy there.
All right, let me give you another kind of question about this. Doesn't it seem to you, this is what people say about annulments, that the church sometimes uses psychological grounds for a finding of nullity or for an annulment, a granting of an annulment? Doesn't that seem just too subjective?
Well, we could get into all those grounds, but let me ask you a question.
Mm.
Is sin objective or subjective?
Well, it's got the both sides of it, doesn't it?
There
like, I
you
can't
go.
Commit a sin unless there's an objective evil, and I can't commit a sin unless subjectively I willed to commit that,
that
sin.
That you had a knowledge and the freedom and the will, right? Okay, so again, with psychological grounds, you can say, you know, this person was addicted or this person had a narcissistic personality disorder or whatever the label is or the psychological grounds, or maybe an intent against permanence or fidelity. Those are psychological grounds, and those are always wrong. They're not ordered to marriage.
Okay.
They're not ordered to create a marriage bond. But the sin part, it depends on the person. And again, every marriage has two unique and unrepeatable persons. So there's every marriage is the whole annulment process is in a certain sense subjective because it's about those two subjects. So we have the psychological grounds and now we have to see if those subjects fit into the psychological grounds. Here's the unchanging truth of the grounds. Do these two people fit into that or do we not have enough evidence that that was the case?
Right, right. Okay, so if someone had an inability to make a lifelong commitment. Psychologically,
right.
They're not the kind of person who's capable of that.
That's right. So the burden of proof then would be on the petitioner to give enough credible evidence to that to say that this person didn't have that. And the whole thing is ordered. Again, the burden of proof is on the petitioner. That marriage, the tribunals do not try to see if you had a valid marriage. They already presume it is valid. You got a valid bond. Nothing's breaking it. You got to come to us with enough credible evidence that we can say, aha, there was an impediment there, and therefore the bond didn't come into being.
I got so many more questions for
you. Keep going.
Rose Sweet, our guest, we're trying to ask her every question we can think of about annulments. We'll be right back with more of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend? Coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
With news from EWTN's Vatican Bureau, you can watch all of the important events from Rome even if you don't have TV access. Using the latest technology, we've made it possible to watch the latest news from the Holy See, all delivered directly to your home via live streams. Watch live on EWTN's YouTube channel and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Very happy to be here on this Monday with Rose Sweet. We've been doing more of these programs where we, instead of taking one call at a time that ranges over a variety of topics, maybe in the course of 10 or 15 minutes, to try to drill down a bit and take the time to answer every question so that we kind of create a resource. And that we do take these shows and put them on YouTube and in an edited format so that they are a resource for people who need or want to get questions answered about particular topics. And we wanted to do annulments, and Rose is the person to do annulments with. So I am in the midst of asking her every question I can think of about annulments. And so I actually wanted to do this question earlier, and our conversation wound in a way I didn't expect, so I didn't get to it. So I'm going to go back to it. Will you give me, please, a brief history of annulments in the Catholic Church?
Well, we could go back to the Mosaic times, because obviously people were coming to Moses and the judges to determine their marriage case. And Jesus says Moses allowed divorce for the hardness of your hearts. Mm-hmm. So we know broken marriages have been around since the beginning. I mean, look at Adam and Eve. They had issues.
Right from the beginning.
Right. Yeah. So, but we do know that Jesus talked about marriage, and the people came to Jesus as a rabbi and a judge to inform them, what about this? What do we do in this case? And we've talked about, especially in Matthew 19 and other places, Jesus talks about some marriages aren't valid. Well, then we have the instance in around 50 AD, St. Paul allowed for the dissolution of marriage when the two people were unbaptized and wanted to leave the marriage to become a Christian and to get baptized. So we see St. Paul actually dissolving a marriage in favor of the faith. And we still have that today. We call it the Pauline privilege, and we have the Petrine privilege.
Oh, so we have an apostle himself giving a ruling about marriage.
Hello. Right. And then, okay, so I wrote this down because I couldn't remember all these. In the 700s, there were papal letters like those of St. Gregory, who communicated to St. Boniface about marriage and invalidity and annulments. In the 1100s, we had Popes Alexander and Innocent, who were saying that they said you couldn't just decide annulment on your own. You had to go through an ecclesial court. You needed to submit yourself to the church in a formal way. So this is all developing, you know. Not the teachings aren't changing, but the development is going deeper. Then in the 1700s was introduced, and I never even heard about this before, the defender of the bond. And in every tribunal, there's a defender of the bond. As the name implies, that's the lawyer for the marriage bond to make sure that nothing funny gets passed.
Right.
Because he's there, he or she is there to make sure that this is legit. So defending the marriage bond. And then in 1936, 1969, more developed norms and instructions like this Dignitas Connubii book. Mm-hmm. That I brought. More of those kept coming out to clarify as the church was growing and, again, not changing the essentials. And in 1983, the Code of Canon Law introduced the thing that really triggers a lot of people, the grounds, Canon 1095.
This triggers a lot of people?
This is the psychological grounds that you just mentioned.
This
wasn't in there before. So all of a sudden, there were a lot of people applying for annulment on this grounds, and so the annulments just skyrocketed.
Oh.
Right, 1983. So we still have reverberations from that, you know, in the church today. And then St. John Paul II talked in the 1980s and the 1960s. He talked to the Roman Rota and, again, talking about annulments and how do we do them and how do we make sure. One time, John Paul II scolded the tribunal for taking so long. Annulments take too long.
And he said that to them.
Yeah, he said, "You have an attitude of inertia."
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And he said, "The people have a right. I call it a fair and speedy trial."
Yeah.
You know,
just give them an answer, in other words.
Right.
To say.
You don't want to rush through this ever, but you don't want to just. Why should it take 2 years to get an annulment? That's something we can talk about after this. But anyway.
Wait, I actually want to. Don't let me forget. I want to get back to why should it take 2 years?
Okay,
I want to know.
Okay. But anyway, so annulment is nothing new. It's been around forever.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
marriage problems have been around forever. God knows the human condition, and the human condition is sometimes things aren't going to go right. Sometimes they're not going to. You might attempt marriage. You might attempt religious vows.
Right.
That happens sometimes too, right? Like people attempt religious vows, and then you go back and look at it and go, no, that you weren't in a place to do that.
Yeah, I even had an uncle who was, he went into the seminary when he was like 12 and a half, you know, right after eighth grade.
That was late in those years.
Sorry. I know, no, really. And his, you know, my grandmother was like, oh, I got to have a priest as a son, you know.
Oh, yes, all that pressure on the kid.
Pressured. And then after, when he goes, I can't do this, when he became an adult.
Yeah.
So it's sad, but understandable.
All right. Then I'm going to go straight into my next question because you kind of set it up for me there. Like, people say this all the time, and this is a fair objection. It costs too much money and it takes too long. Like, look, I want to do what the church, I'm trying to do this. I'm being the person in the annulment. I'm trying to do what the church told me to do. This is costing me too much money and taking too long. And in the meantime, my whole life is on hold.
And so I'm going to go down to the Protestant church because they're easier.
But sometimes people do that. But there are really, like, there are people who don't leave and don't, and they're suffering because it costs so much money and it takes so much time.
Okay, I hear you loud and clear. Now, in 2015, Pope Francis issued a mandate to the tribunals to not charge anything for annulments. But I was around before that, and I know that the average cost of annulments in our country was about $600 to $800, okay?
Okay.
But even before the 2015 notice to the tribunals, there was a hardship clause. And if you ever went to the tribunal and said, I just can't pay this $600 to $800, and here's why, you weren't charged a penny.
Okay.
So the church has never made it absolutely mandatory. I do know in other countries where the church is, people, clergy are on the take, you know, they would.
Well, you have a low opinion of other countries.
I do.
You keep being like, in other
USA,
countries, don't
USA.
Name them.
I haven't named any of them.
Yeah.
But we do know they charge $10,000, $20,000, $40,000, and then they would give you the annulment.
Wow. Okay, so that looks bad.
It is bad.
Okay.
Okay. So in our country, here's the sad thing is, I think this is an abuse of the annulment system, of the process. They don't usually, at the parish level or the tribunal level, they don't fully explain what your rights are and what this is all about. They hand you a packet of paper and say, fill this out and be brief.
Oy.
And that's really, really bad. So if you can show hardship, you don't have to pay anything for annulment. Now let's talk about, they take too long. I agree. They do take way too long. It's ridiculous. But I also know the reason. It's money. We need to have, in the perfect world, a full staff at every diocese of working around the clock, trained experts in canon law to process these cases. So if in a diocese you have 400 or 500 cases that come in a year, you know, it takes a long time because they've got maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 people. And those people in the tribunal are sometimes pastors. They're retired priests or they're part-time lay people. They don't have the wherewithal to set up a machine to get these things through like the DMV does.
Yeah, right.
You know? And even the DMV is you have to wait a long
Known for their quickness.
I know.
Yeah, the legendary quickness of the DMV. Yeah, I see what you're saying. So, every case, it's got to have a certain number of eyes on it. Somebody's got to do some typing. There's actual practical reasons why. It costs money for the diocese to move this along, and staff is money. It just costs money to have all that staff.
But the reality, here's the flip side of that. It's good, I think, in a lot of cases for the person to have to wait a year to slow them down because a lot of times they're out dating again and trying to get in a new relationship, and they need that downtime. No, slow down. You're not ready to attempt marriage again.
We're trying to get every question about annulments answered. Rose Sweet is here to do that. Now it's time for you to call. If you've got questions about annulments, your own, someone else's, or a general question, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. We're going to take a very quick break. This would be a great time to fill up the phones with those annulment questions that you've been holding for the first hour. Well, we did a bunch of chatting. There's more. I've got more questions for Rose, and I'm going to keep asking them, but I want you to get in on the conversation now as well. 888-318-7884. Catholics with questions about annulments, welcome to call. You know who else is welcome to call? Anybody else with questions about Catholic annulments. Here's that number one last time, 888-318-7884.